closer.
Welcome back to another episode of Sean and Ed's Do Baseball. I'm Sean.
And I'm Ed.
And we're here bringing you baseball history.
That's right. We're a bi-weekly baseball history podcast where the story catcher doesn't know what the story pitcher is out on the mound throwing them.
And that makes things fun.
Makes things fun and certainly interesting.
Yeah. I think baseball would be much more interesting if the catcher had no idea what the pitcher was throwing.
They're constantly crossed up.
Yeah. Let's do it, folks. Let's the cross-up league.
Yeah, there we go.
We've done it. This little bit we have has turned into something else.
All right. Well, before we have the first annual general meeting of the cross-up league, Sean, where can people find us on the internet?
You're making me do it.
I know. Switching it up this time.
Well, people can find us on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, at Doing Baseball. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at doing.baseball. I'm at Sean Do Baseball on Twitter if you want to see me react to early season Blue Jay takes, as well as sharing some baseball history. Eds, where can they find you?
You can find me at Eds Do Baseball if you want to see me do not very much.
There you go. Yeah. Send him a message. Tell him to tweet more.
Okay, yeah.
Or X it more.
X at me.
Well, I'm having a beer now, and thanks to our sponsor, Two Loons Brewing. Check them out at twoloonsbrewing.com. Make great beer, great lagers, great IPA available at LCBOs around Ontario. Check out Two Loons brick and mortar location coming soon, but if you're at beer festivals throughout the summer in the GTA around Ontario, I'm sure they'll be there serving up some really, really great collaborative brews and some fun new stuff. So check them out.
Wherever you're enjoying your adult beverages, ask for Two Loons. And if they don't have them, maybe they'll get them.
Maybe they will. You know, your favorite bar. But either way, wherever you're enjoying, however you're enjoying,
please enjoy responsibly. And of course, be of legal drinking age.
Yes, we did it.
We did it. We got through all the stuff.
We got through the stuff.
Second take.
Yeah. Coming through the gristle. Where's the meat?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's right here. We're I'm bringing you a story that I'm going off list again. We kind of talked about it before we got started here.
Yep. But
I guess I'll let the listeners in on it too.
There we go. Off list.
Going off list. Not that anyone knows what the list is.
I don't
anyway,
even
so
know.
So it doesn't matter.
I
could
don't
say
know.
That it was on there. No one knows.
Nobody knows. No one knows. I have my own list.
That's the whole point. But yeah, it like I say, it started out. I picked this guy because I read that he was a groundbreaker in one regard. But as I sort of did the research, to be frank, like his career is a little unremarkable. But you know, we're gonna cover it here. But that's we were talking about before we started the podcast. That's kind of what we're trying to do here.
We've covered a lot of unremarkable careers on this podcast. Yeah. So,
well, like you were saying, we kind of got into almost like a contest of trying to one up each other with like the craziest shit, and eventually you just like run out of steam on that, and
you gotta save some for later as well.
Well, that's true. That's
we
true.
We can't all have barroom murders.
That's
and
true. I do
and,
have some
and
crazy stories.
Jail
left
stories
in the
every single time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyways,
but like you say, what we sort of set out in the beginning to do was just, you know, tell stories about players that, you know, maybe got lost and slipped
history.
Through the cracks in history, you know, so.
There we go. Let's do it.
Anyway, I'll get started right away. January 21st, 1885.
All right.
Sean Bernard Meyer was born in Marble Hill of Bollinger County, Missouri.
Marble Hill.
Yeah.
And sorry, his name again?
Bernard Meyer.
I thought you were just going to be like, Bernard.
Just Bernard.
Just Bernard.
Bernard He's Meyer. Like Cher.
He's like Cher. That's why everybody forgot him. They couldn't find his last name.
That's right. Yeah. So Bernard Meyer, he was the first of four children born to his parents, George and Mary Louise Meyer. His parents called Bernard Benny for short.
Okay. I accept it.
So Benny had two brothers, William and George, and the baby of the family was their youngest sister, Mary. Okay. Just get a little family background. We don't really talk about them ever again. So
there we go. Family of six living in Marble Hill.
Yeah. According to an article in the Brooklyn Daily Eagle, March 30th, 1913, titled, Benny Meyer's Life is Like One of Horatio Alger's Tales.
Good. I love a Horatio Alger tale.
Do you know who a Horatio Alger
no
is?
No idea. Okay.
My next line is, who is Horatio Alger, you ask, Sean?
I do.
I assumed you would. I'm sorry for assuming. But
I just went with the smartass, and I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have an explanation.
Okay.
Horatio Alger was an American author who wrote young adult novels about impoverished boys and their rise from humble backgrounds to middle-class security and comfort through good works.
Okay.
Okay.
Very Ayn Rand of him.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess so, yeah. Alger secured his literary niche in 1868 with the publication of his fourth book, Ragged Dick.
Was Dick spelled with a Y or an I?
An I. That's why I included it, because I was like, I can't not throw that in in a you know, podcast that's trying to, you know, somewhat make light of things. You know, the story Ragged Dick, just a quick aside, is the story of a poor shoe shiner's rise to middle class respectability.
This is what this podcast is about. It's just like, we're going to talk about baseball players. We're going to aside about a novel called Ragged Dick as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, but this aside is now concluded. So,
no more family, no more Ragged Dick.
That's right. Back to Benny. So according to an article in the Brooklyn Daily Eagle, March 30th, 1913, well, I mentioned this before. Benny Meyer's life is one of Horatio Alger's tales. Benny's father, George, was a thrifty German carpenter.
Okay.
Well, that's a direct quote from the story. He moved his family from Marble Hill, Missouri, to a town called Hematite around the time that Benny was born.
Mm-hmm.
The Hematite, just so you know, is a small unincorporated town about 30 miles south of St. Louis.
Okay.
So it's like farming.
Yeah,
farming community.
Farming outside the big city.
So the Eagle recounted Meyer's childhood days in Hematite. Quote, here Benny grew into a round-faced boy who trudged to school every day and ate everything in and out of sight. I'm not sure how they got that. Like, this story is 30 years later.
This kid was eating a lot. His face was good and round.
It continues. At the tender age of 8, his appetite was such that Pa Meyer gave Benny the choice of cutting down his meals from 6 a day to a conventional 3, or going to work.
Listen, son.
I can only afford 3 meals for you today. If you want the regular 6 that you've been having, you're going to have to pay for 3 of them yourself.
We're going to have to either work to eat program, or you just eat less.
Yeah.
I think you should just eat less.
No. Benny said, fuck that. I'm going to work.
Okay.
So, being of sturdy mold, Benny worked faithfully, ate liberally, and studied some and played baseball much. That's the article continuing.
Busy guy.
Yep. He idolized the players he followed in the sports pages of the newspapers, especially the top infielders of the day, and he decided he wished to follow in the footsteps of his idols Bid McPhee, Tommy Corcoran, Huey Jennings, and Germany Smith.
I love Germany Smith.
Germany Smith is one of the great names.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. Stories.
Yeah.
In baseball history.
No, we're going to be covering a lot of Germans.
He, quote, became a star on the young Hematites, graduated to a regular position on the village team, and then joined the County Nine. In 1904, at the age of 19, so he's playing,
yeah,
you know, just around the area, but he's really good, because yep, at the age of 19, 1904, as I said, Benny went to the Iowa State League and played third base for the team in Boone.
Okay.
For $100 a month.
Ooh. All right.
I didn't do the inflation comparison, but that's
either way. You're 19.
Yeah.
You got a job playing baseball.
That's true. That's true. Can't complain about that. He played well, and word of his skills and prowess eventually trickled to the right channels after he received praise from famed baseball writer Walter Lanigan.
Okay.
It was a guy, I believe he wrote in St. Louis. I can't remember which paper, but so this gets his name into the mouths of important baseball people, let's say. And because of that, a St. Louis Cardinals scout named Charlie Barrett told Meyer that they needed a shortstop in Dallas. And of course, Benny wanted to go.
Yeah.
You know, starting out his baseball career. So according to this Brooklyn Eagle story from March of 1913 again. Benny was born in 1887 mm-hmm. and just 18 at the time. And just to sort of, you know, tie it together here, correct it, whatever you want to say. I guess family ancestry was revealed to Saber in 2018. So as I mentioned at the start of the episode, they found out he was actually born in 1885.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't matter. My point is, like, he's still young. Whether he's 18 or he's 20, he's still young.
Not a huge difference.
So there was a bit of a family council to determine whether Benny should go all the way to Dallas for baseball,
mm-hmm.
or I assume stay and remain in
living at home.
And, you know, yeah. I think they might have, like I said, his dad was a carpenter, but I think they also ran like a little farm.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
So having a boy leave is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he went up to Iowa already or whatever, played in the Iowa State League.
Yeah.
And by the way, $100 is like $3,500 a month. So not bad.
Okay. That's not too bad.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's interesting. They talk as a family. You said the family was gone, but here mm-hmm. we are.
Mm-hmm. So Benny ultimately prevails in making his case.
And I'm going to Dallas.
He's allowed to go.
I'll stop eating if you let me go to Dallas.
Yeah. there may be a bit of a compromise because he doesn't really ever stray far from the horse business.
Okay.
Or whatever.
Okay.
I'll get to it. You'll later get to on. It. I'll come back to
You're
it.
You're just putting horses in yeah. there. Just yeah. so. Just
horses.
Yeah.
Meyer later recalled to Ed Wilkes for a 1966 article in the St. Louis Dispatch, quote, "I wasn't a shortstop, but I went to Dallas anyway because I was out of a job."
Okay.
So I guess they didn't like him in Iowa. But anyway, maybe that's what his parents' point were. They were like, they got you, bud.
You weren't good. We watched you.
So Dallas offered him no better compensation than what was available to him at home.
Okay.
So Meyer wrote back to them saying, quote, "I can make more money catching runaway horses in St. Louis."
That's a career.
Yeah. Be a horse wrestler.
Is your horse missing? Call Benny.
A few weeks later, Dallas released Meyer and sent the release with a note urging him to, quote, catch the runaway horses.
Oh. Well, that's kind of mean.
Yeah. Couldn't it just release him? Like, he just had to say this spiteful thing at the end of the letter.
Just so you know, don't go fucking for another baseball job.
Well, he must have changed his mind, though, about the money.
Okay.
Because he played in 107 games Ooh. For Dallas that season under manager Curly Maloney.
Okay.
Which sounds like not a real person.
That's a fake name.
Yeah. I personally think that the team, quote unquote, secretly capitulated.
Uh-huh.
And gave him the money he wanted. And I'm surmising this at this point with no, like, true evidence.
Uh-huh.
It's just... I think his future actions may have been spurred by a victory in this arbitration,
okay.
shall we call it, or this, you know, arbitration that I am theorizing happened.
So they're not offering anything, but then he wins out and he plays, and you're saying that kind of sets the table for future.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He learned something there, okay. I think. Meyer later told reporters of his first season in Dallas, quote, "It didn't take long for Curly to find out that I wasn't a shortstop, but he kept me on the club and led the team in batting that year with .277.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's not too bad by today's standards, but I feel like back then, you know, that was probably not a good team.
No. You know? I was really expecting a number that started with 3.
Yeah, so was I. He returned to Dallas for the start of the 1906 season, but did so well that his contract was purchased by the St. Paul franchise of the American Association.
I was going to say.
He was shipped to Seattle for 1907, batting .312 in 134 games. And had such a showing that, quote, 8 big league clubs were after him, and the Boston Nationals had him practically lassoed when the St. Paul club asserted its claim to him, and he was forced by baseball ethics to return to the American Association. So he was sent back to St. Paul in 1908.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
So he wants to go to the big leagues, but
yeah. But St. Paul's like, nah, we own him.
Yeah.
We suck.
He plays in Seattle, but he's ours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Baseball's so weird
back then.
So weird.
Yeah. Yeah. So Benny Meyer has now got the attention of the major leagues. And in the fall of 1908, the 23-year-old Meyer signed with the New York Giants.
Ooh.
He showed up to Giants spring training camp, but he told the Eagle, the Brooklyn Eagle, that he, quote, never even got a warm cup of coffee. And he was assigned to the Newark team.
All right. So he's kind of, it's like essentially AAA for the Giants.
Yeah, I think it's like AA might have been the highest level at this time.
Doesn't matter.
Anyway, he's in Newark.
He's one level below the majors.
Yes. Despite the demotion, the new contract from the Giants gave Meyer a good financial kickstart, and he felt that his baseball life was secure. So he purchased 176 acres of farmland near his hometown of Hematite.
Okay.
Okay. Meyer had a fair amount of savings, squirreling away a portion of his previous salaries, but he was forced to, quote, go into hock to the extent of some $3,000.
It's that debt?
He had to borrow $3,000.
Yeah. All right. Three G's, which was probably more like, 100 G's.
Yeah. The local banks had no issue loaning the money to Benny Meyer because, as the newspapers report, Meyer was putting Hematite on the map as a ball player and, quote, becoming one of its first citizens.
Okay. Like, no one can remember Hematite.
We're bumfuck nowhere, and Benny has bought a big farm here, and he plays for the Giants. So
it's the Canadian equivalent.
Just give him $3,000. It's no big deal.
It's the Canadian equivalent of, like, driving through rural towns, and every town is like, home of Stanley Cup champion
Jason Arnott.
Jason Arnott. You're like, yeah, that guy retired like 40 years ago.
The Sega Beach, by the way.
Yeah.
So he became one of the first citizens. He got this farm. Benny's father took over managing the property because he was a thrifty carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It was perfect for him.
Perfect.
So he's taken over the property, and Benny paid off the mortgage while playing for Newark. George Meyer established a business of purchasing and selling mules and cattle.
Okay.
His farm also sold farm and dairy products, quote, for the ready St. Louis markets.
Okay.
So he's got a good little, he's got a backup plan.
Yeah. He's investing and he's building a farm and a business back at home while he's playing for Newark.
He's got a little hobby farm going.
Yeah.
So Benny then spent three seasons in Newark under manager Joe McGinnity. And at the end of the 1911 season, Toronto traded Bob Vaughn to Newark for Benny's services.
Nice.
So Benny comes up here to play for the Leafs. In 1912, Meyer was playing in the AA International League for the Maple Leafs. In 134 games, he batted .343 with 5 home runs and 11 triples and a slugging percentage of .475, leading Toronto to the pennant.
Wow.
He also got married this year.
Ooh.
And we don't talk about his wife again.
At all?
No.
Can you say her name?
It's not a family story. His wife's name is Ruth.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, Ruth.
That's very nice.
Okay, never mention Ruth again.
Okay.
The Brooklyn Dodgers management had heard of Meyer's baseball skills and wanted to sign him, but Benny, having learned something with his holdout with Dallas years earlier, didn't sign right away.
Okay.
It's weird. He doesn't have, that much leverage, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they want him, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, he's not...
So he's holding out. He's maybe.
He's holding out. Years later, as a coach with Philadelphia, Meyer told the Philadelphia Inquirer that he visited a printer in town and made some stationery with, quote, Meyer Stock Farm, Benjamin Meyer, proprietor, raiser of blooded cattle, hogs, and chickens. Across the top.
Okay.
He then penned Mr. Ebbets a letter that explained he had retired from baseball and, quote, his large interests in the stock business demanded all of his time.
Ooh.
So he's got all these fake letterheads. And
he's
shit.
Like, oh, I'm going to look like a real fucking farmer.
Yeah.
With like a big ass
farm
and production.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be like, I have so many investments. I just don't know if I can play baseball for the, who are you again? The Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Doggers? The dog? You want me to play for a dog team? I have dog. Yeah.
He visited his neighbors and borrowed their cattle. And then a sign painted with Meyer Stock Farm was hung over the gate to the farm, and when Ebbett's representative Steve McKeever came to visit Benny, neighbors helped him create a sense of inflated business by coming to discuss buying, selling, and market conditions.
I don't... Look, I need your cows. Why? I'm trying to trick the Brooklyn Dodgers into giving me more money. That was a conversation that really took place.
Yes.
We now know... Like, I don't know why you're so down on yourself coming into this one. This is phenomenal stuff.
Okay, well, it is. So McKeever goes back and informs Mr. Ebbets of the situation and of Meyer's quote-unquote booming business.
I counted 84 cows.
That's right, yeah.
It's a lot of cows.
So many milk jugs. There are milk jugs everywhere.
His neighbors kept talking about the stock market, asking him for advice.
So he's impressed by his business acumen.
Uh-huh.
And he goes back to Ebbets and tells him that he feels that, quote, a man of Benny Meyer's capabilities was needed on the Brooklyn Club.
Okay.
So the ruse worked. And Meyer forever became known as the first publicized holdout in Major League Baseball history.
Wow.
First publicized.
Okay, There was...
That's why I was kind of like, you know, when I looked this up, this was the kind of the groundbreaking thing.
And what year was this again?
This was 1913, I believe.
Yeah, somewhere in there. I knew we were probably still in the early 1900s here.
Yes, so it was after 1912, so yeah, 1913. Yeah.
So he's the first that they're like, well, old Benny Meyer's going to hold out on the Dodgers because he's got so many cows.
When I read about this, it made me think of, I wonder if Jim Boughton knew about this guy. Because if you remember the Jim Boughton story, first of all, his father knew about this guy. His father was writing letters to major league teams. To Western Michigan University.
Yeah, I remember that.
To get him on, I know, I'm just explaining for everyone else. To get him on to, you know, on the radar of the Western Michigan University. He was just a high school kid.
Yeah.
And his father was writing letters posing as a fan.
Yeah.
Unsigned. And then when finally came to major league times, when the Yankees were showing up, they had fake letterheads of like fake letters from other teams laying around and everything. And anyway.
The ruse has been done before, but this is, you're saying this might be the first.
This is the first publicized holdout, anyway.
And like, fucking, sounds like a conniving plan to get more money from the Dodgers.
I wonder if he was giving them neighbors cuts.
Oh, I hope.
Anyway, Meyer later told John Rackaway for the Mount Vernon Register that McKeever was so convinced that Meyer should play for Brooklyn that he, quote, reached into the top of his pants and came out with $1,000.
Wow.
It's like, I'll buy that cow.
I like how it says pants, not pocket.
Yeah.
It really makes me just think of someone just shoving their hand.
In his underwear. Fucking gross.
Can I get a different $1,000?
No. What do you want? Sock or underwear?
Mr. Evans told me to give it to you like this.
Sock, please. So Brooklyn agreed to pay Meyer more than the $2,400 limit they normally paid. Wow. And Meyer didn't complain, saying, quote, there were a lot of better players on the club making $1,500.
Holy shit.
The Brooklyn Daily Eagle touted Meyer's arrival. Quote, it is years since a player came to Brooklyn with so promising a reputation as an all-around pastimer. Our hero batted .343 for 134 games, making 160 hits in 467 times at bat and scoring 89 runs. He is credited with being a great man on the coaching lines. Which was another thing that Benny Meyer became known for. Okay. His coaching abilities.
Oh, okay. They're like, you coach third.
Yeah. It was that kind of time. You know, a lot of player coaches around. But it's funny, like, the newspapers at this time, really, they don't ever talk strategy or anything. They just talk about how he was very vocal and very, very, very loud.
He yells the loudest, which means he's the best.
And I quote, from the Brooklyn Daily Eagle on January 20th, 1913. Quote, a coacher of rare ability, One of the best headliners on the sidelines that ever jarred their timpani with wild clamor designed to encourage the runner and disconcert the opposition. He originates quips and jests and is full of pure food, law, pep, and ginger in the original package bearing a facsimile of only the genuine signature.
That is a mouthful.
I don't know what that means.
Well, your pronunciation of timpani was poor.
Timpani. Yeah. Oh, did I say timpani?
Yeah, you did. No, it's a timpani. But anyways, yes. That, I don't even know, I don't know how much of that I really took in. It just sounds like he was, like, they're like, he's a loud asshole. How many words is that? We need 30 more.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Well, here's, like, as best as you can get to, like, a video of it in 1913. Because, again, from the Eagle, March 30th, 1913, which described the sixth inning of an exhibition game featuring Ty Cobb and his All-Stars.
Okay.
This is, like, there's tons of press on this guy showing up to town.
Yeah.
Here's from the paper. Quote, there suddenly boomed from the base coaching lines a chatter, the likes of which has not been heard from our side since the day of the big wind. I guess they'll stop us now. Wow. Lay on it. Lay on it. Give it a ride. Give it a ride. Come on, Leo, old boy. I guess you can do it. Here's where we all go home. We've got to have them. We will have them. Just meet it now. Just meet it now. Wow. And then Callahan laced a double. Well, I guess that'll hold him. Guess not, eh? Now, Stangy, old boy, take your time. It's there. Owie! A hit! As Stengel drove out a single that brought in Reagan and Callahan. The infield's still in. The outfield's still out. We'll never get out.
That's a good one. All of that was annoying. Way better than Wild Bill. Thank you for the throwback. Yeah. But all of that was annoying until that last one.
Yeah. Yes, it was. So annoying. I tried to make it as annoying as possible. And more of the same until four more runs had filtered across. Gentle reader, it was Benny Meyer giving us a sample of the coaching that won Toronto a pennant.
Dear God, I love...
They're stoked they're about just him stoked. Just shouting.
Imagine being the real manager, like, all right, I'll go fuck myself.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Well, never been much of a loud guy, so get them out of here. So, unfortunately, the Superbas didn't get off to a good start in 1913. In the first game of the season, Meyer was made the scapegoat in a losing effort for Brooklyn, who opened the season against Philadelphia at Ebbets Field. According to the Richmond Item, quote, with one out, Otto Gnabe doubled. Meyer muffed Hans Lobert's foul in the sun field. But Casey Stengel overcame this error by making a sensational catch of a long fly from the same batter. Then Meyer muffed Sherry McGee's fly, letting Gnabe in with the only run of the contest. Brooklyn finished April barely over 500 at 7-6, but won 13 of 16 games to begin the month of May, taking first place in the National League. So we're doing okay there.
Yeah.
But by mid-June, however, they'd fallen to fourth place. McKeever, who of note was also part owner, complained in the DeKalb, Illinois Daily Chronicle about Meyer's performance. He blamed Benny for two defeats after, quote, losing fly balls in the sun of right field. Even though Ebbets right field specifically was widely considered the worst part of any park for outfields to play.
Okay. So it was like a very challenging environment.
Yeah, due to the harsh, I guess the sun shone in at a weird day. I think I was reading that Ebbets was slightly like cockeyed or whatever off the tradition, what's become
the traditional, you know,
the traditional bearings or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they set it up so the sun is not less of a problem. Mm-hmm. But at this time it sucks. So he loses fly balls. He's playing right field and he's just...
And they're giving him no... Or McKeever,
yeah,
who I think is like a little bit mad about the negotiation after finding out... I think he found out it was a ruse.
But doesn't own any fucking cows.
He doesn't have one cow. Got one horse.
And a donkey. Yeah.
So McKeever was quoted as saying, quote, what the devil's the use of letting Meyer muff balls when there are two such fine Irishmen as Herbie Moran and Leo Callahan warming the bench and aching for a chance to win fame and glory for dear old Brooklyn.
There you go.
Irishmen.
Is he not Irish? Wait, no, what's his last name? Meyer? Okay, yeah, they're
German.
Well, this guy.
He's a thrifty German carpenter.
Oh, yeah, he's a thrifty German. I forgot about the thrifty German part.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. So Meyer didn't get into too many starting lineups for Brooklyn in 1913. 38 games specifically, which he batted just 195 with one home run and 10 runs batted in.
Oof. So, like, all the fanfare is...
It's just, yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, he's fizzling
out. He's fizzling.
Compared to what they were talking when he came into town. Manager Bill Dallin used him in pinch running and pinch hitting roles primarily. So there's a bit of friction here, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily for Benny, in 1914, the Federal League forms.
Yep.
And the Federal League offered Benny a bigger payday, so he jumped ship and defected to the new league. Meyer told Wilkes, quote, the Federal League came along and I jumped over to the feds because Baltimore gave me a 3-year contract and $5,000 for signing.
Yep.
Might as well. The Newark Star Eagle reported March 14th, 1914, subheadlining the article, quote, Kirkpatrick, Meyer, and Swasina are life of Baltimore feds in training. And remarking on his bellowing voice, quote, during the practice, Benny Meyer, a former Newark player, inserted plenty of pepper into the work with his foghorn voice and afforded much amusement to those who witnessed the morning and afternoon sessions.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But he wasn't there just because he was a loudmouth, unofficial player coach. The Baltimore Sun praised the new Terrapins leadoff man and outfielder as, quote, a good judge of a ball. He also can hit, and when he gets on, can scamper around the sacks in pretty fast time. Benny is a fairly good base pilferer, too. He is the right man in the right place.
Okay, gotta say, scampering pilferer?
Base pilferer. That means thief, I think.
I believe it does, or like pillaging. Based someone on the pillaging a place. Regardless, scampering pillager, amazing words.
Mm-hmm.
Just wish newspapers wrote like that nowadays. Imagine someone
if you read an article like that today, though, you'd probably be like, this person belongs in the hospital.
Ronald Acuna scampering around the bases, pilfering.
It's 1934, see?
I don't care. I think newspapers should stay back in the 19... If you want to sell newspapers, today, just write like old-timey newspapers.
Right. I'd buy him.
Exactly. Here we go.
And Benny did not disappoint the fans in Baltimore as he went on to have his best season yet. He hit .304 for the Baltimore Federals. Okay. He hit a career-high 5 home runs.
There you go.
So factoring for home run inflation with probably 15, 20 home runs.
Sure.
Today.
Why not? Yeah.
And totaled 71 walks to accompany his 152 hits. He was a roving outfielder playing all three positions, and he also was tasked with playing shortstop in 4 contests. But despite all the success on the offensive side of the ball, he continued to struggle defensively and led the league in right field errors with 16.
So it wasn't Ebbets Field.
No. No. It was not the Sun.
Okay.
So at the age of 29, 30, depending.
Somewhere in there.
Depending, you know, which birthday you're going by, Benny hit his stride, right?
Oh.
Wrong.
No.
Or at least by 1915 standards. He started the season at a little bit slower clip than the year before. He batted .242. He's got 29 hits, and just 2 of them are for extra bases.
Yeah.
2 doubles. But amazingly, he's taken 37 walks against 13 strikeouts.
Wow.
In 162 plate appearances.
Okay.
So he's got a nice .424 on base percentage after 35 games.
That's more than nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But his average is...
His average is junk, but...
His average is like 190, and he's got like a .4...
His average is .242.
Oh. Which yeah, is, that's not bad.
Yeah, but it's 1915.
Yeah, so they don't give a fuck about your 37 walks.
No, they don't care at all. Despite the good eye and the sparkling on-base percentage, writer C. Star Matthews lamented the, quote, poor start for Meyer in the Baltimore Sun, June 2nd, 1915. Quote, Meyer is very popular here, but he certainly has not played good ball. He has a splendid eye for a ball, but he waits entirely too often and too long. His hits seldom come, and when a run is to be driven in, In the field, he is far from dependable, and many a ball dropped to the ground out in Terrapin Park, which he should have caught with ease.
Okay. So it sounds like he needs to be a DH at this point, basically. Mm-hmm. And he would be amazing if he was a DH nowadays, hitting, like, fucking 230 with, like, a 400 on-base percentage.
Yes.
But back then they were like, well, he hits like shit. Mm. He doesn't swing enough, and he drops balls.
Mm. I mean, he's not showing much power right now at this point, but...
But, I mean, even the walks, it would be way more valued nowadays than they are at the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what does Baltimore do? That's right. They trade him to the last place Buffalo Blues.
Always goes to Buffalo.
For outfield counterpart Joe Agler.
Yep.
The Buffalo Express stoked their readers the same day, June 2nd, 1915, writing, quote, Megaphone Benny Meyer, ranking as one of the best sideline coaches in baseball.
Once again, why is that the thing that he does best?
I don't know.
They're like,
1915, man.
I know, but it's just funny. I
can't explain that part.
There used to be like, well, he hits great and he yells really loud, and now it's just like, he yells.
Yeah. That's true. Today, leadoff man extraordinary, possessor and purveyor of baseball pep in large quantities. A sweet and all-around ball player and one of the most popular players that ever wore a uniform on a Buffalo field is now a member of the Buffalo Blues. Meyer is a hard-working ball player of the type that never says die and never knows defeat until the last man is out.
Cool.
But despite the hype and the optimism, Benny continued to struggle in Buffalo, and those good numbers evened out a little bit. And he finished the season slashing .234, .348, and .289 after going .231, .316, .300 for Buffalo.
Okay.
In 93 games.
All right. So he still takes his walks, but it's not getting better.
No, it's getting worse. So when the Federal League found itself in deepening financial straits after a lack of action in their antitrust lawsuit against the major leagues, it folded at the end of the 1915 season. And Meyer went back to Brooklyn and tried to make the team again. But he was assigned to Toronto. But because he had defected to the Federal League and the International League barred players who had done that from participating in any of their baseball games, Meyer was disqualified and didn't play baseball in 1916.
We're gonna send you to Toronto. Well, Toronto doesn't want me. All right, have fun in Toronto.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. So he didn't play at all. In 1917, he found himself among the ranks of the A-level Southern Association for the Mobile Seagulls, batting .272 in 113 contests.
Okay.
So he got a little better there.
Yeah.
The next year, he bounced around again, beginning the season in A-ball Topeka and finishing it in Oklahoma City of the Western League, and then to Tulsa for 1919. But that was the end of regular playing time for Benny Meyer.
Okay.
But he was not out of baseball. In 1921, Meyer was offered a franchise in the Southwestern League. He was offered a club in Miami, Oklahoma, and he did field a team he cobbled together, but he told Wilkes for that 1966 interview that, quote, I got the offer in March when I should have had my team in spring training. But I didn't have a single player.
That's going to be an issue.
Yeah, that's a problem, Benny.
Also, I want to throw out there, Miami, Oklahoma,
yes.
The most disappointing Miami to visit.
I imagine. So. Maybe Miami, Ohio.
I'm going to Miami.
Yeah. Imagine. You just booked the wrong flight. Brought no pants. It's winter. Okay, so he's got no players. So to get players, he ran a sporting news ad that advertised that Benny Meyer
needed players.
Was holding tryouts in St. Louis at Robeson Field.
Apparently I have a team, fellas.
Yeah. They just told me in March.
Who wants to play for me?
More than 30 players showed up.
That seems like a very few, considering there's... Well, I'm sure at the time they're not carrying 26 guys, but, like, you know, it seems like very few to pick from.
Imagine the dudes that showed up, just, like, guys that read the sporting news.
How does this turn out?
Yeah. He cobbled a team together from this ragtag bunch, but running a franchise ultimately was not for Benny. And he left the team mid-season and became a minor league scout. He's probably like, these guys are trash. I'm fucking out of here. I didn't look that team up.
No. Whatever. We're past that at this point.
Yeah. So he left the team, became a scout, minor league scout, beginning a second chapter in his baseball career that would last almost 5 decades.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, we're not done.
Okay. He's a scout now.
Yeah, he's a scout now. We're not getting into too much detail here. He did get one more chance in C-ball a few years later, though, in 1923. The 38-year-old outfielder played 52 inconsequential games for the Salina Millers in the Southwestern League.
Okay.
They didn't have his stats on baseball reference.
Very inconsequential, apparently.
Yes. Yeah. That's why I put that.
We're not even writing anything down. Yeah. Just go have fun, yes, Benny.
Have fun, guys.
I'm making it back to the majors.
Oh, you're not. No, you're not, Benny.
Go Millers.
Salina Millers. Okay, in 1924, Art Fletcher, manager of the Philadelphia Phillies, recruited Meyer to coach. And as he told the Hutchison News, quote, to serve him as an ivory hunter, Meyer's knowledge of the business should serve him well in the scouting job.
Okay, so I'm assuming he's not hunting elephants or rhinos.
No,
he means by ivory hunter looking for good players.
That's right.
Okay, yes. Good.
Yeah, weird metaphor.
Weird metaphor, but you know what? I'll take
probably,
it.
Probably timely.
Timely, definitely. They were like, that's a great metaphor, sir.
Following a dismal season in 1924, in which Philadelphia finished 7th in the National League at 56-96-1, Meyer thought about retiring. He told the St. Louis Dispatch, quote, he, quote, just wanted to go back to the farm and sit up on a creek bank under a big shade tree and watch the crawfish die.
That was a weird ending.
It was a weird ending.
It was a weird ending to that quote. I was like, yeah, he just wants to retire and just sit under a tree and watch
things. Also want to murder small lobsters.
Like, is he going to eat them? Or like, is
I assume so.
Yeah, he's just got a cat there, like, torturing them.
I don't know. I don't know. Benny's got some weird shit going on there. But nonetheless, he returned to the Phillies in 1925 as a coach. Must have killed enough crawfish. It was more of the same for the Phillies that year. They finished one place better at 6th, but they still had a dismal record of 68-85. On a lighter note, Fletcher did give Meyer one more chance to bat for his career late in the season. On Jesus. September 20th, I know.
He's like 44.
Yeah, he's old. He's old. No, he's 40.
But okay, I don't
on
care.
On September 22nd, 1925, at Forbes Field, the Pittsburgh Pirates shit-kicked the Phillies 14-4.
Get in there, Benny.
And with the game out of reach, Meyer entered as a defensive replacement.
That's like, a really bad idea. It doesn't sound like he was good when he was 30.
Yeah. Of all things, that was the worst he was. That was the thing he was the worst at.
Least capable
what
of.
What I am wondering in this situation is, like, did they not have finite rosters back then? Like, I imagine he wasn't a rostered player.
Imagine.
And they were just like, yeah, I'll throw the coach in. Like, imagine, like, today, you know, they were just like, oh, fuck, we're down. DeMarlo Hale, get up on there and get grab a helmet and a bat.
Greg Council, buddy. Now batting.
Yeah, exactly. Well, player manager... I mean,
that's a thing, but like, yeah, it's like, it's not like he was playing every once in a while. It was just,
he hadn't played on this team ever.
I feel like umpires in the league were just more chill back then. They're like, it's 14-4.
It was more like a men's league back then.
Yeah, that's it was true. It's 14-4, man. Like, nothing's.
Whatever, we'll just write it down that Jimmy was hit.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that's not what happens.
Oh my God.
Because he gets in there, and he led off the 9th inning and smoked a double to left.
Fuck yeah.
And then scored on an RBI single by a man named Chicken Hawks.
Yeah.
Just to clarify.
He's on my list.
It's a man. I know. I know he's on your list. In his final game of his career, the 40-year-old Meyer was 1-for-1 with a double and one run scored. And so Meyer finished the 1925 season with the best statistical season ever. I did not fact check that.
But he batted 1,000.
And I'm aware it doesn't qualify just for you sticklers out there, but his average was 1,000 and his slugging percentage was 2,000.
There you go.
For an OPS of 3,000.
Yeah, fuck you, Barry Bonds. Yeah.
Suck it, Barry.
Another 40-year-old did better than you without the drugs.
Yeah. We don't know about that. In 14 minor league seasons, Meyer played approximately 1,220 games. We're not sure exactly how many, since minor league records from that era are spotty at best. Tough. But of the statistics available, Meyer amassed 1,135 hits in 4,068 at-bats for a .279 batting average. That's across AA, Single-A, C, and D baseball leagues.
Wow.
After that season, 1925, Meyer became a full-time scout. His tenure with the Phillies lasted from 1924 to 1926, and he spent 1928 to 1930 as a scout for the Detroit Tigers. In 1929, Babe Ruth authored a column in the Pittsburgh Press about certain oddball, or for lack of a better term, memorable characters from his baseball life. Ruth called Meyer, quote, "the noisiest coacher in either league. Benny has a voice like a foghorn, and he starts exercising it when the first batter steps to the plate, and it's still going strong at the finish."
And he eats 6 meals a day.
That's right, yeah. He only pays for 3 of them. I don't know what he does for the rest of the time. His foghorn coaching style scored him another job in 1945 when Meyer managed the Grand Rapids Chicks in the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. The Chicks finished the season in third place at 60-50 behind the Fort Wayne Daisies and the eventual champs, the Rockford Peaches. Through his older years, he helped Rogers Hornsby with a baseball school that Hornsby operated in Hot Springs, Arkansas. And by the mid-60s, Myers was in the offices of the White Sox and claimed the title of the oldest scout in baseball. Newspapers still interviewed him about his holdout with the Brooklyn Dodgers until the day he died. And he stuck to the original story of creating the ruse for the Ebbets reps. And when he died on February 6, 1974, at the age of 89, the Sporting News wrote, quote, "what Meyer lacked in talent, he made up for in brass when it came to negotiating his contracts." And that, my friends, is the somewhat anticlimactic yet interesting story of the National League's first publicized holdout and loudmouth coach, who, by the way, was nicknamed Earache.
Wow.
Which makes sense.
Wow.
Because he was so loud. And that's the story of Bernard Benny Meyer.
Dude.
And I thought I mentioned the guy's name earlier, but I don't think I did. Just thanks to Mike Huber at Sabre for doing most of the heavy lifting on that story there. But yeah.
Wow. Yeah. No, that he was not on my list. And, all I gotta say is cow negotiations, man. That's what I'm taking from the story.
Trick your team into them thinking that you're a big farming business. Let them think you're John Dutton.
you got cows. The more cows you got, the higher your salary is going to be with Brooklyn. That's amazing. No, thank you so much. That was Benny Meyer, everybody. Jesus Benny Meyer. Christ.
I got that... from a book, which I thought I took a picture of earlier, but I'm just looking it up quickly because that's where I first stumbled across Benny Meyer. I was reading through a Sabre book. Sabre did Wales Terriers and Terrapins, the Federal League, 1914-15.
Oh, damn.
It's a great collection of, Sabre articles on
people
that were in and out of the Federal Leagues.
Yeah, so, wow. It's a good reminder to tell everybody to subscribe or become a member of Sabre or buy some of the books that they offer on their website. No, it's great. It's a great resource. Honestly, I had no idea. You fucking downplayed that so much to me. And there was some moments in there that I felt
Sometimes I doubt myself.
We all doubt ourselves. We're about to record a second one. I feel like mine's shit now because this one was so much fun.
Oh,
so
no.
I hope our listeners feel the same and tune in a couple weeks to hear another story from baseball history. Till then, where can they find us?
They can find us on TwitterX.com at Doing Baseball and on Instagram and TikTok at Doing.Baseball. And I'm on Twitter and X.com Doing Nothing at Ed Stu Baseball.
Yeah, and I'm at Sean Dew Baseball. I try to be a level-headed Blue Jays fan on there, as well as occasionally retweeting some things I find interesting. Wherever you're listening to us, however you are listening to us, we really appreciate your listen, your download, however you're doing it. If you could give us a review, if you could give us a follow, that would be fantastic. And until next time, I'm Sean.
And I'm Eds.
And we were bringing you the baseball.
Okay, bye.